It is Saturday, September 22nd, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the Week in Geek News, plus Grammar Girl, all about her successful podcasting business, and in the second half, your questions and comments of technology. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Trock, so please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. On this episode of Geek Speak, we have a special guest, Grammar Girl, talking all about her podcasting business. During the second half of the show, welcome to join a conversation. You can ask us anything you'd like. Actually, no, we're going to stay on topic today. We're going to talk about podcasting and some grammar. The numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can contact us right now. Go to geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Dina Eastwood's Faces of Hope, an event for ending poverty, both locally and globally, at Clint Eastwood's Tama Golf Club in Carmel on Sunday, September 30th. Information and tickets at risinginternational.org or 662-9295. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxel. In the airman with me are geeks Miles Elam, a Slacker geek and student.
Good morning.
And Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA.
Good morning, Lyle.
Sean, you sound so much more, I don't know, professional than Miles.
You notice that? So I'm not a Slacker student.
I think that must be it. But you don't have an iPhone, so you're not as cool. Start the news.
But you know, someday he'll be an English teacher, and then he will... Everybody will just admire him and respect him.
Absolutely.
He'll walk down the street.
No, no, the word you're looking for is fear.
Oh, the students will
fear
you.
You're going to teach by fear? Good luck with that.
I'll take fear over respect. You know, if I can't get the respect, I'll settle for fear.
There is a certain amount of fear that is exuded by an English professor. And we've got the grammar girl here today. You don't want to mess up in front of them.
You know,
so maybe it's just better to be quiet.
I completely agree. In setting up the show, I had to actually send an email to Mignon. Mignon is actually in there. Hi, Mignon.
Welcome to Geek Speak. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much. We're going to do some geek news, and then we'll get into talking with you and feeling uncomfortable the entire time about our own grammar. Sean, let's start with you.
This last week was the Intel Developer Forum, IDF, in San Francisco. It's the 10th anniversary. It was at the Moscone. I had a chance to go there for a day, and it was kind of fun. The expo floor was big and crazy. I've never seen such small booths before and so many people packed into them. Food and drink abounded and it was kind of cool.
And
there was some technology there too. One of the big pieces of news from Intel was the announcement of their next gen 32 nanometer chip.
That small.
Transistors that small. Well, the Intel press release states that 4 million transistors can be fit into the period at the end of the sentence in the press release.
Wow.
That's how small 32 nanometer transistors are. 4 million of those.
4 million in a period.
So the next gen CPU is codenamed Nehalem. It'll be out the end of 2008.
Sounds like you just sneezed.
Yeah. Nehalem. It'll be out at the end of 2008. It'll be 32 nanometer. It's going to have supposedly 8 cores. Hyper-threading will make a return, so there'll be 16 logical cores available. Symmetrical multiprocessing, these threads could be powered down when they're not needed. So power savings are going to be huge.
Will it do my laundry?
Should be interesting. sure, if you hook up your washing machine to your computer and set up software to turn it on.
That's a trick question. No one does Miles' laundry. This is Intel's announcement, one of their announcements.
Yeah.
How's AMD comparing to this?
Let me finish with Intel.
Oh, okay.
AMD was across the street like normal.
Okay.
I heard they were in a local hotel room. It's funny. After working at AMD, I used to do that. So we'd try and get all the press who were going to Intel Developer Forum to come across the street and see what AMD is doing. It's kind of fun.
Come to suite 7.
Yeah, exactly. It was a suite. But Intel, I think the most interesting thing they announced was their TikTok strategy.
Is that wait till AMD folds?
What they're doing is they're alternating next-generation silicon technology between new microprocessor technologies and die shrinks year after year. So this year, in the next few months, Penryn, their codename Penryn chip, which is a dual and quad core chips at 65 nanometers, will be coming out. Next year, a new processor technology will be coming out. And then after the year after that, they'll shrink that down.
When you say new processor technology, are you talking about the substrate's going to be different? It's not going to be silicon, or it's going to be something else? Or
well,
what exactly is that?
It's interesting you get there. Right now, it's silicon, right? And they are continually shrinking the process down, making the transistor smaller so you can fit more on. The 32-nanometer Nehalem will have 731 million transistors in it, right?
That's a lot.
And then another... Well, 18 months to a year or 2 years after that, they'll double that because you're able to shrink the transistors down even more. Well, Gordon Moore, who came up with Moore's Law 40 years ago, was at Intel Developer Forum, and he's been calling the end of Moore's Law for a long time now, and the scientists keep proving him wrong.
Proving him right, depending on how you look at it.
I guess. He says in 10 to 15 years, Moore's Law is going to go away.
We run into that whole quantum fluctuation problem at the smallest enough scale. Sure.
Yes. The problem is you know, we have reached a physical barrier for shrinking down silicon transistors. He says we've hit something fairly fundamental, and that is material science. You can only line up individual atoms. It doesn't become feasible at some point. You're going to reach the size of an atom, and you can't go any smaller.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting where we go from there. Quantum.
You know, but 10 years ago, they were saying there's no way to actually project like a screen. I mean, this is all done kind of like silk screening. But
yes,
there's no way to project it and actually etch at this small scale. And, you know, using diffusion or using cancellation and smart people, they were able to get smaller than that. So there's always this kind of rolling line. But what you're saying is that this brick wall of atoms are a certain size. You can't get much smaller than that.
Yeah. And Intel let slip that they're already working with carbon nanotubes for next-gen technologies.
Right.
So, and then after that, quantum-based computing.
So the speeds might still go. Well,
they'll get there, you know, somehow.
Yeah.
It's interesting right now. Remember, we were in a gigahertz race for a long time.
Sure.
And now we're in the multi-core race.
And
how many cores can you fit in, and where does that end, you know?
In this process that's about to come out, that's a 65-bit or 64 track, 65 nanometers?
Oh, right now, yeah, 65 nanometer this year.
How many cores
32.
Is that going to have?
This year is going to max at 4 cores.
Okay.
The code name for that is Yorkfield, and the dual core is called Wolfdale. Nehalem will have 8 cores.
You're a smorgasbord of information.
I know.
Thank you so much.
These code names are crazy. You have to live this stuff every day.
The engineers at Intel play D&D.
I mean, these
names.
Too creative.
I feel like there needs to be a game master here.
Actually, they're usually named after rivers and mountains and places in Oregon and various different places.
I like the D&D theory better. Let's go then.
But to answer your other question, AMD... they did announce something of their own. They are not going with a dual core or a quad. Well, they are coming out with a quad core and a dual core, but they're also coming out with the 3-core chip.
Why? Just to be different?
So it's based on their Barcelona, codename Barcelona chip. Phenom is the consumer-based version of that chip that'll probably come out early next year, I think. Actually, I think the 2 gigahertz Barcelona is already out.
Okay.
That's the server chip. And it's at lower speeds. But a 3-core chip, I don't know if that's going to compete with Intel at the low end or if they're trying to create a whole new market. But it seems clear that these are quad-core chips with 1 core disabled. So maybe they're just...
Oh, so they're just trying to get that in market.
Yeah, well, you know, you only get so many chips from a wafer that are usable.
Sure.
And those chips that aren't usable with 4 cores, maybe if you disable one, you get more usable chips, and this is what they're doing. That's what I'm guessing.
Well, thank you very much for the update on processors and the Intel Developers Conference. Wonderful to have you there and share that with us. Miles, we have one news story from you, sir. Do you have one?
I have a couple. One is a recap of what we covered in previous weeks.
All right.
The Comcast throttling,
yes.
Bandwidth throttling. They've somewhat clarified what excessive use is. And they've also stated that they always call the customer before they cut it off. And generally, what they do when they're calling the customer, they're offering a commercial account. These are users that are greatly exceeding what the norm is.
Mm-hmm.
And when they say they talk about their limit as being the equivalent of 30,000 songs, 250,000 pictures, or 13 million emails in a single
high
month.
Bandwidth users. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Great. So they're clarifying that to their customers. That's good. And your
that's a lot. I just can't see anybody doing
that's someone hosting something from home.
Yeah.
Right.
And
you know, that makes me feel better about Comcast.
Yeah.
So good. I think I'm going to go get it this next week. Finally.
You just hate DSL because where you are.
And the other one is we were talking about iTunes and the fact that NBC had dropped iTunes for their shows. And
yeah,
what,
I heard about this. Their new and now strategy.
NBC is now going to be offering those shows for free off of Amazon for a free download.
With commercials?
Presumably, yes.
Yeah, they are with commercials.
Yeah. That's a big
deal. And only for the first week.
Oh, commercials only for the first week?
Or? Well, the show. They're only going to offer it for free for the first week after the show airs.
Oh, and then after that, it's an archive kind of pay-for
thing. And then something happens to it. It becomes unusable.
Mignon, do you know more about this story?
I do. It's advertising supported, so the shows will be up with ads that you can't skip in any way. And then it goes away in a week. Yeah. I'm not sure if it self-destructs or what happens.
Yeah, so similar to the CNET style. If you ever looked at CNET reviews, they always have this ad ahead of time that you can't skip through, and then you get to the actual product review.
Yeah.
So the technology's been out there for a while.
Yeah, it's an interesting new development.
I think it makes a lot of sense. All of these broadcasters should put their content up for free for a limited period of time.
Especially when you're trying to be the second source instead of iTunes for media. Yeah. I mean, if you're fighting with iTunes, you better have a really good incentive, and free is a good one.
They've kind of been doing this already with pilot episodes.
Yeah.
To get people into the show.
All right. If you want to know more about that story, last week's episode, you're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and you have been listening to Mignon Fogarty, also, who joined in to help us straighten that whole story out. Mignon is the creator of Grammar Girl and the QD Now, or Quick Tips.
Quick and Dirty Tips
Quick and
Network.
Dirty Tips. Thank you very much. And Mignon, thank you so much for being here today with us.
You bet. It's a lot of fun to be here.
Now, I've been listening to you for about a year, and I guess you've been around since July of last year.
That's right.
Doing this wonderful 5-minute podcast.
Right.
Weekly.
Right, quick
all
tips.
All about grammar.
That's right. Quick grammar tips about 5 minutes every week. The show comes out on Thursday night and is available to all the major podcasting directories, including iTunes, where podcasts are free.
Yeah.
So just like...
How do you support yourself with this? How do you make money off of it?
The show is ad-supported, so we have ads most of the time in the show. We can have one sponsor since it's such a short show. And in addition, then, there are spin-out products. For example, I have an audiobook out now, Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips for Better Writing, that is doing quite well. So the podcast, in addition to advertising, is also supported by the books that we can do around the shows.
And it's not just Grammar Girl. You've got a whole set of podcasts that are all relatively
successful. That's right. I'm the founder of the Quick and Dirty Tips Network, and we have 6 shows right now. There's one, The Mighty Mommy, is about parenting, and Legal Lad.
I heard Mighty Mommy last night. It's just wonderful. It's like the one I thought was wonderful was this idea of looking at your house, before you're a parent, looking at your house and how it can be safe and how it not can be safe. And it's a wonderful example of there's a photograph of their house before a baby and there's a pair of scissors sitting on a coffee table. It never would happen again, So that idea that how do you prepare for yourself? And I recall thinking I was all ready. We had the baby, had our son Wyatt for, he was 3 or 4 months old, hadn't done anything with the house. And eventually all of a sudden I'm chasing a toddler and everything's unsafe. So it was a really wonderful example of think about this before you become a parent. So I highly recommend Mighty Mommy. You can get all these. Go to geekspeak.org today, and you can take a look at the links over to your site. So go through a couple more of your podcasts. I also want to talk about how you set this network up.
Yeah, you bet. And so they're all formatted on the same – they all go on the same format that Grammar Girl goes on. Grammar Girl was the first show that founded the network, and it's 5-minute scripted show, one host with one quick tip you can use every week. You can use right away, like getting scissors out of your house. Yeah, that's a good tip. And then we started adding shows, and there's Legal Lad that talks about legal topics, and Money Girl, which gives finance advice. Mr. Manners is very popular. He gives etiquette advice. He gets the funniest questions of anyone in the network.
Can you give an example of it?
Oh, someone asked him, what do I do when one of my coworkers smells, for example? And he answered that question a few months ago.
I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, definitely. That was one of his most popular episodes. And who else? Oh, and we have a Second Life show that some of your listeners are probably interested in if they play Second Life. So the Traveling Avatar does that. And another way that we make money actually is by licensing our shows. So Money Girl, Legal Lad, and the Traveling Avatar are also available at thestreet.com. So they've licensed our shows.
Okay.
So,
and is that commercial? Is it commercial free?
It is. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So with Grammar Girl, you started. How did you think of making a podcast about grammar?
Well, I've been a writer for many years, and I had been a magazine writer, and ended up going over doing more corporate work, but then found that I missed interviewing scientists. My show was about science. And so I was sitting in the coffee shop just down the street last summer, editing a technical document for a biotech company, and missing, interviewing people. And the idea just came to me that a quick tip about grammar would be something that I could do a podcast about that would be interesting to people and that wouldn't take a lot of time to produce. The part I missed there is I had been doing a science-based interview show that was taking way too much time to produce, and then I was looking for something shorter. And
was that an audio show? Or
it was. Yeah. It was a podcast.
It was a podcast.
Yeah, it was a podcast, and I spent about 10 hours a week editing that show, and it was just unsustainable as a hobby.
Was it an hour-long show?
It was about a half an hour.
And 10 hours for half an hour?
Yeah. Oh, I was really bad. I mean, I had never done any sound editing before, so I really, learned the ropes doing this other show. And then by the time I had the idea for Grammar Girl, I knew what I was doing. I had the equipment, and mm-hmm. I knew how to edit sound and everything. So once I had the idea, I was able to post it very quickly. Within a week, I had a show up. And within a month, it was in the top 100 at iTunes, which was amazing. Just a huge surprise.
The audio quality of Grammar Girl is quite good. How are you doing that?
Thank you. Well, I record in my home office, and I use free software on my PC. I use Audacity. I have an Alesis mixer.
Is that a FireWire in device mixer?
It's an Ethernet.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I have, a nice microphone now. When I started, I had, the $15 microphone that came with my computer. But now I have a nice Sennheiser microphone and a pop filter.
Oh, it is nice.
Yeah. So, since when the show took off, it was clear it was going to become more than my hobby. Then I upgraded my equipment.
Yeah, spend some money on it.
Yeah.
And when you say it's more than your hobby, are you making a living off the network?
Yeah, this is my full-time job. I am back in January. I quit technical writing and I have a podcast full-time and run the network.
And you have a whole bunch of voices. You're not doing any doubling up. You're not doing Mommy,
No, those are all other hosts.
All other people with their expertise in the field that...
Right, I know nothing about parenting. I told the Mighty Mommy, she's the one show on the network I just know nothing about. She could say, hold your baby upside down and shake it. And I'd say, good job, nice tip.
So do you pay these other people to participate?
I do. They're paid. And
is it based off of how many downloads they get, just like the amount of revenue you get from advertising with them?
Well, the current hosts are on a revenue sharing model, and then the new host that we're signing on, I have a new partner. So I just announced a week or two ago that... My publisher, who publishes my book, Holtzbrinck, is also backing the podcasting network. And so when we're bringing on new hosts now, they're really handling the business side of that. And
managing a contract with the host.
Right, yeah.
Are you checking the audio for quality? Are you doing the uploading? Are you kind of the editor too?
I am. I'm the managing director, so I make sure everything runs and they handle the legal stuff.
Okay.
Wow. Is this a once-a-week type thing?
Well, each show comes out once a week, and okay. So we have 6 shows right now, so almost every day, and we hope to have 20 or 30 shows within the year. So we're building a big-time podcasting network, so, I'll be on the Quick Tips format.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
that's great.
Do you get a lot of people saying, I want to do Quick Tips for you, I want to work with you?
We do. I get a lot of pitches now, especially when we do PR. For example, when we announced the partnership a week or two ago, it was the top story at Publishers Weekly, and we received about 10 pitches that day. So
now you're up for awards as well.
Right. I'm so excited. This Friday and Saturday is the Portable Media Expo down in Ontario, California. And I'm going to accept the award for Best Education Podcast. And I'm up for the People's Choice Award. They announce it live at the expo. So, I'll be there with my fingers crossed. The competition's really fierce, so I'm not expecting to win. But
now, I recall about 6 months ago on one of your episodes, you were talking about how now you're having difficulty getting the transcript of your show up at the same time, and now Grammar Girl is written beforehand, correct?
Right, it's a scripted show.
So isn't that the transcript?
It is, but as you can imagine, as Grammar Girl, my listeners have high expectations for perfect transcripts. And when I first started, this was, my hobby. I still had a full-time job, and I was writing the transcripts and often posting them at midnight, and there were typos. Every week, it was a nightmare, and I would get mean emails, and I would cry, and it was awful.
You can't make mistakes, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I can't make mistakes. And so, but at that point, I didn't have sponsors, and I couldn't hire a copy editor. So I really thought about taking the transcripts down, not putting them up online, because it was just such a headache. So, and then when I released that show, a bunch of listeners volunteered to copy edit for me. They were so wonderful.
And did that work?
And it worked.
Is it still working?
Yeah. So one of the people who initially started volunteer copy editing for me, now I pay. Uh-huh. And then I have another copy editor. I have two copy editors now.
So you take your, you write out what your show is going to be like. Mm-hmm. This week's show is all about starting sentences with...
Hopefully.
Right. And I thought it'd be funny to do that, but since you made the title of the show, hopefully, right. I thought it, yeah. In any case, that show you've written, when did you write that episode?
I wrote that about 2 days before it went up. Okay. I need to get ahead, but yeah. I'm not. So.
Yeah, tell me about it. I called you last night, so yeah.
Right.
to be on the show. So you write this thing, and then you send it off to your copy editor to look at that, and you record it at the same time, or?
No, I send it off. I write it. I send it off to the copy editor. Fortunately, my copy editors are quick turnaround people, mm-hmm. so they'll get it back to me that same night. They know when to expect it. And then I record that night. So I'm writing it on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I send it to the copy editor Thursday night. They send it back within a couple hours, and I record Thursday night in post.
Okay.
So it's very last minute.
Yeah. Now, since you have such a detailed script that's copy edited perfectly, mm-hmm. I mean, when you're reading this and making this become audio, do you have to re-record a lot to fix the... you know, to try to represent a comma versus a semicolon? I mean, how detailed do you get to it?
For me, it hasn't been hard to write a script that goes the way I would speak. When I'm writing it, I'm thinking about how I would say it. Some of the newer hosts have had trouble writing their script, and then they find when they read it, it sounds stilted or mm-hmm. canned. And so I think when people are starting out, new people, there's a learning process where they have to learn how to write for speaking. But once you get it down, it's not hard. The one thing that's a challenge is for me, the hardest shows are the ones where I talk about punctuation, because I have to say something like, hopefully, comma, you'll understand what I'm saying. And so to get that comma in there, the semicolon, it sounds forced. It sounds, yeah, yeah, it's kind of a challenge.
Wait, you just started a sentence with hopefully.
I know. I think it should be allowed, but...
you listen to the podcast.
I did listen to it this morning.
That's actually...
It's really good.
Yeah, it is.
Especially the echo effect when you're talking to yourself in your head.
Oh, I know. I have
How did you do that?
I have a sound editor now who does the post-production on the shows, and he did that. I was thrilled
that
when
was
I
great.
Heard it. Yeah. It was great. I don't know how he did it.
Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Cruzeo, providing local internet services, including DSL, computer care, classes, and website builders. Information about Cruzeo memberships available online at cruzeo.com or by calling 459-6301. You're listening to Geek Speak. We're now taking your calls with questions and comments about podcasting, starting your own internet business, or grammar. The phone numbers are 476-2800, again, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. And, of course, you're welcome to send us email anytime you like. Just go to geekspeak.org and fill out our Contact Us form. Stay tuned with Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m., right after Geek Speak on Central Coast Public Radio. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland. We have Minyan Fogarty. She's also better known as Grammar Girl on. She's the creator of an entire podcast network with 6 5-minute weekly quick tip shows. I highly recommend them if you haven't heard them. You can go to geekspeak.org to learn more about Mignon's shows. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Please join our conversation. The phone numbers are 476-2800, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com.
KOSP co-sponsors the 22nd Annual Benefit Picnic at Swanton Pacific Ranch, a benefit for the Land Trust of Santa Cruz County. This event will include live music, free rides on the Swanton Pacific Railroad, guided walks to Big Creek Falls, and a catered barbecue. Bring the whole family and friends on Sunday, September 30th, from 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the Swanton Pacific Ranch. For more information and tickets, please call 429-6116.
Thank you, Miles.
You're welcome.
Mignon, clearly, podcasting is a giant revolution in a new media form. There's a lot going on. Can you give us an example of how many people are listening to your network?
Well, the Quick and Dirty Tips Network gets about 1 million downloads a month right now, and Grammar Girl alone just passed the 7 million download mark. Total shows. Total shows. Since July
going
of
to one.
Since July of 2006 when the show started.
That's a lot of people listening to Grammar Girl.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I never would have thought when I was sitting down at the Kind Grind, you know, coming up with the idea, I thought grammar would be interesting and fun, but I never thought it would be so popular.
Now, radio has always been a pretty intimate medium because you're in this space where you're hearing a voice like you'd hear it if someone was right next to you. And sometimes, especially when you're hearing headphones and stuff, it's so close that it's closer than normal conversations you'd have with a person. And since there's this disembodiedness, it almost feels internal. So there's this really wonderful quality about a voice in radio form. Podcasts is a great example of that. Last night when I called you to talk to you, to ask you on the show, even though we'd talked previously through email, hearing your voice, I all of a sudden felt like I knew you, and it was a strange experience. That happens sometimes. I'm sure that happens with me locally in Santa Cruz, with people that know my voice. Has that turned you a bit into a celebrity? Are people saying, oh, I know your voice?
No, not at all. No. And I'm really glad.
it's happened with Lyle several times
really?
In town. Yeah, people
in
come
Santa
up to
Cruz.
Him and say, you're Lyle Troxell.
Just when they hear you talk?
Yeah. Just with me around. I mean, it happens all the time when I'm not around, I'm sure.
It does.
Yeah.
But this is the Central Coast is not huge.
But you're in Arizona.
Right.
So you probably...
Right. I've been nervous about it because I've been on TV a couple of times, and I'm not sure how I feel about being a publicly recognized figure. Although we just did our first video podcast, too. It's up on YouTube. So I think that it's something I can't turn back from at this point.
Well, luckily, you don't have a face for radio. You can actually be on television and succeed successfully. How was the experience of getting successful enough that Oprah gives you a call and asks you on?
It was unbelievable. One amazing thing about the PR has been that I haven't worked at it. I've been, had a lot of media inquiries. For example, going on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and I don't have PR people working on my behalf. They just called me out of the blue, and it's been amazing, just a whirlwind and a lot of fun. And the appearance on Oprah Winfrey then spurred me to produce the audiobook. You know, I got an invitation to be on the show, and I thought, gosh, I really wish I had a book to sell. And a friend said, well, why don't you produce an audiobook from your podcast? And I called my publisher, and they thought it was a great idea. And so within, about 10 days from when I got the invitation till after I went on the show, everyone worked like mad. My publisher was great getting together the cover art and all the deals with Audible and iTunes. And, I formatted my podcast because they're already scripted. I could turn it into a really nice book.
Collection of a whole bunch of tips.
Right, a collection of a whole bunch of tips. And even though the shows are free at iTunes, on the audiobook, they don't have the advertising, they don't have the announcements, they're organized in a cohesive way, so all the punctuation is together, all the word choices together. Whereas if you were to look for that on iTunes, you'd have to hunt around to look for what you're finding.
Yeah, and so this is a CD form, like a traditional audio CD.
Right.
You can play it anywhere you can do CDs. And it's got, looks like 30 different tips.
Right, yeah. It's about 25 different tips. And, I was fortunate in that I already had a publisher for my print book, so we were able to turn it around really fast.
Now, how long is your typical podcast? What do you shoot for?
I shoot for about 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't want to overwhelm people.
Yeah. We do an hour-long radio show, and the podcast does sound long. I'm surprised people stick with us. I think the tip format also of 5 minutes is wonderful. For a while, we were doing tips, about two-minute tips on air, geek bits. But it is a lot of energy to do that, and us being all volunteers and having day jobs, except for Miles, who's
we would
just
each produce our own geek tip.
Yeah.
Geek bit.
It's a lot of work to do that kind of thing. So are you glad now that you're getting paid for it? Is it to the point now where it's work?
Oh my gosh, it's a dream come true. I mean, I love my job. The show I'm doing for next week, I'm finally ahead because I'm going to the expo, so I had to get my show done. So next week's show is going to be about whether or not to use tase as a verb. You know, the student got tased.
Don't tase me, bro.
And is that a legitimate verb or not? And so part of my job, I got to call the taser company and ask them, what do they think about tase as a
They're
verb?
Like, we have the trademark.
Yeah, it's a trademark.
I bet they love it.
And so what's the outcome? Is tase a...
Yeah, I think tase is the appropriate verb. If you use laser as the model, lase is the verb that goes with laser. So, and at the company, they use tase.
Mm-hmm. So it kind of makes sense. It fits.
Yeah.
One of the things I like about your podcast, which people might be turned off from the idea of getting lectured about grammar, is that when you have a friend stop you and correct you, it's probably, no offense, Miles, it's probably one of the most offensive things.
I have not done it to you in so long.
Yes, but I still think of you whenever it happens.
Good.
I mean, the truth is, I actually like to be corrected when I've made a mistake. Not
really?
On air, please. Yes, because I want to better myself. the thing that your podcast does is it doesn't feel like a nagging voice. It's very practical. Is that because that's who you are, or because you know that people don't want to be lectured?
Well, it's because of who I am. I mean, I wouldn't be comfortable correcting someone about their grammar. To me, it's the same as going up to someone on the street and saying, you know, why did you wear that sweater? I just couldn't do it. But also, one of my models for the show was Schoolhouse Rock. I don't know if you guys remember, but there was a Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, a Saturday morning cartoon, and it was so much fun. A noun is a person, place, or thing. I would sing along with those, and I can't sing, but that was sort of my model for Grammar Girl. I wanted it to be short and memorable and fun and helpful.
And you use that as a basis for when you speak in your podcast quite a bit, where you'll say, well, just like it said on the show.
Yeah. I like to bring in popular music. I use Lay Lady Lay as an example for how to remember lay versus lie. Lay Lady Lay is actually grammatically incorrect.
Well, would you mind if we played one of your episodes?
Oh, no, go ahead.
It's 5 minutes. I think we've got room. Let's go ahead and do Lay versus Lie. This is actually from your book, Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips to Clean Up Your Writing.
Awesome.
I don't do this
available
very often.
Available at all major bookstores.
Available everywhere at all major bookstores. Yeah, here you go.
Lay versus Lie. If you exclude the meaning to tell an untruth and just focus on the setting, reclining meaning of lay and lie, then the important distinction is that lay requires a direct object and lie does not. So you lie down on the sofa because you're taking an action and there is no direct object. But you lay the book down on the table because lay refers to the book, which is the target of your action, making the book the direct object. This is in the present tense, where you're talking about doing something now. You lie down on the sofa and you lay down a pencil. If you have children, it's especially important to get this one right because you probably tell them almost every day, go lie down for a nap or at bedtime. Another grammarian, Bonnie Trenga, pointed out to me that if you get it wrong and tell them to go lay down, you'll be drilling it into their heads wrong at a very young age, and they may never be able to get it out of their heads.
That's great. I'm going to take it out here because we do have some questions. That's a sampling. It very much sounds like your podcast. In fact, that might be audio from your podcast.
Yeah, it's actually re-recorded.
Have that same structure.
Yeah,
but I got to say, I'm a fan of the show, so it's kind of a pleasure to have you on.
Really cool.
Let's go ahead and take a call. I don't know where you're from, Mark. Where are you calling from, Mark? Oh,
I'm
sorry.
Calling on Highway 1 here.
Okay. What's your question, Mark?
I'm doing some, I'm attempting to do some podcasting from my church, and I'm recording them in MP4 format, and just trying to figure out the best way. I'm using attempting to use a program called Feeds for All and to get the XML, but mm-hmm. I'm just not getting it to work.
Okay. Are you saving that final file as an MP3 file?
Or MP4? MP4.
MP3,
yeah, it's coming off.
Yeah,
of
final
server,
MP3. MP3. Sources. So your question is how you actually turn that into a podcast? You're having some difficulties creating the XML, or you're questioning about hosting?
Yeah, well, do I need to have, like, the Feeds for All to do the link?
I think we can kind of address that. Mignon, would you want to talk about
that? I'm not familiar with Feeds for All. One thing that I do is I actually hand code my XML feeds. it's so easy. If you go do a Google search for iTunes technical specifications, and they have a sample feed, and it's very easy. You can just substitute your file names in there, and that way you have a lot more control over your own feed if you want to move it someday.
Right.
It's really nice to own it yourself and not have it hosted somewhere where
now,
they're formatting it for you.
So let's talk a little bit about what the feed is. It's a text file that's formatted as an XML document, so it just goes on a web server like a web page, but it's a very structured format. And you're saying you edit those by hand? You know?
Right. I just write it in Notepad and save it as an XML file. So, you know, and every time I have a new... the feed is made up of, there's a channel and there's items, and then in the items you have your enclosure. But it's so simple. I mean, that's making it sound harder than it actually is.
And a perfect example to see one of these is you can go to, like, geekspeak.org and click on... Actually, go to the Grammar Girl's site. But in any case, when you click on see the feed to actually copy the URL, you can put that in a web browser, and then you just say view source, and you'll see exactly what the file is. It's just a kind of complicated text file, really.
Right. And then you put that on your web host, wherever you do your hosting, and then you submit that feed to iTunes and the other podcast directories, and you're automatically listed there, and then the feed allows them to pull the new MP3 file every time you release a new show. When you release a new show, you have to add it to your feed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the podcatchers like iTunes and the podcast pickle, they'll ping your feed and get the new file.
They're requested every hour or so, yeah, whatever the change rate is. So does that kind of answer your question, Mark?
Yeah, and if we wanted to go like subscription-based podcast,
there isn't actually a protocol for subscription-based podcasting. It's not like a way to get money from it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually really quite difficult. The idea behind it was never really for a paid, you know, a revenue source. I'm sure there's a newer format that has some way of paying for them. But right now, all it is a listing in the simplest form. It's a document that lists where other files are and talks about what those files are. And those files have to be downloadable via just like a website. So to restrict it based off of some revenue model makes a complexity in there that doesn't really exist in the system. And that's why it's very hard to do those. So one of those solutions is to not do podcasting and do streaming content. But I'd kind of ask why you want to try to create revenue from it. And if you do, does somebody possibly want to tap into your audience by advertising? Because that's the best way to make revenue right now for podcasting.
Right, okay.
All right, thank you, Mark, so much for the call.
Thank you.
All right, I knew we were going to get some grammar questions because, of course, we have a very intelligent audience. From Watsonville,
Hi,
Judith,
yes.
Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi. I have a question for Grammar Girl about the use of hyphens.
Great, go ahead.
And I was editing something, and the person who'd done it used a lot of hyphens to, like, set something off for emphasis or whatever, and I mostly edited them out.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just wondering what do you see as the proper use of hyphens?
Yeah, you should never use a hyphen in place of a dash. People do that all the time.
Or a dash?
Yeah, a hyphen is not a junior dash. So if you're typing and you want to, it sounds as though the person you were editing was trying to use hyphens as dashes to sort of separate out parenthetical elements.
As a dash. Yeah.
When you say a dash, you mean an M dash?
Yeah, an M dash.
What's an M dash?
An M dash is longer than a hyphen. So it's the kind of dash you use when you want to put it around, an aside or a parenthetical element in a sentence. So if you're typing and you don't know how to insert the M dash, you have to insert that as a symbol in Word or Open Office. If you don't know how to insert the symbol, you can use two hyphens. You can go hyphen to make an M dash.
And I actually think Word will convert that to an M dash for you.
Yeah, sometimes it automatically inserts it.
But usually you use two M dashes to kind of outline something you want to emphasize.
Right.
Inside of a sentence.
Right, one on either side. Sometimes you could use parentheses around the same thing often, or commas,
Mostly I was using commas or maybe a semicolon.
Talking with you about this, I'm remembering an episode of you. You covered this very well on one of your episodes, right?
Right, dashing through the snow.
Dashing through the snow. So if you're curious more about M dashes and dashes and hyphens, dashing through the snow, one of
go to quickanddirtytips.com.
Yeah, isn't there a kind of hierarchy with it? Like comma is a short, flowing aside. The M dash is more of a larger break. Or if you have a comma delimited list inside, and then the parentheses is something completely outside of the current topic.
Yeah, good job.
That just summarized her episode. That's really good.
Nice.
Like we're talking about parenthetical structures. Can one of you give an example of parenthetical?
Let's see. On the spot examples.
How about
I was walking down the street. I know I should have been doing my homework, but anyway.
Yeah, there you go.
That's pretty good. Okay, and of course these structures are quite hard to do through audio format. I can see how that's difficult because, of course, you could have structured that sentence as multiple sentences. There's a lot of ways to do that.
You're almost better off using a period and starting a new sentence.
Yeah.
The parentheticals make you sound so smart.
Really, you don't need a lot of punctuation, except the period.
It sounds like the woman Judith was editing was really getting carried away with the dashes.
Well, I mean, part of it is she was, there were certain things that where she was saying for emphasis, and so I understand. I left one of them in.
Yeah.
But most of the other ones I just edited out, either second sentence or commas or semicolons.
Yeah, it sounds like you did the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I've noticed about this kind of the new world of a lot of text communication, these instant messaging and email, is that your structure becomes much more like you're writing notes. And I recall when I write notes, it's very common for me to finish my whole note with a little slash, dash, m dash, whatever it is on paper. It's hard to tell with my name. So it's this kind of way to denote that I'm saying goodbye. And I actually do that in my email now relatively regularly. I don't do an M-dash, I do a dash. So there's a style that takes place because of the way we're communicating all the time that is not, doesn't have a rule set, doesn't have a long basis of structure, because of course the right way to say it is sincerely or something like that, comma, new line, maybe some tabs. So what about that that issue? Is that hitting you quite a bit?
Yeah, people ask me about that all the time. What do I think about instant messaging and text messaging and new verbs? For example, you know, is tase a verb? Is it allowable? You know, and
Or IMing,
right, texting. A lot of people ask me about that. And I think that when new technology comes around, you do need a new language to describe it. So it's not surprising at all that new words are coming up to describe.
And what about new styles of punctuation?
I am a big fan of the interrobang. I will promote that every chance I get. So it doesn't have anything to do with what you just asked me about. But new punctuation, there's a mark called the interrobang, which is a combination of a question mark and an exclamation point to express shocked surprise. So if you're going, what? Whereas people would say question mark, exclamation point. You know, there's a combined.
How long has that character been around?
It's been around, I think, for about 30 years. And wow. It sort of increases in popularity and decreases. There's no key for it on the keyboard. You have to know the insert symbol.
What's
code.
The insert symbol, since you like it so much?
Oh, I don't remember. I have to look for it.
Judith, I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, well, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And I highly recommend Grammar Girls podcast. You can find it on iTunes. You can also find it by going to geekspeak.org and clicking on today's episode links. You'll find it all about that. Now, we had another grammatical question we might as well address. But one thing before we do that, you said about new words. One of the reasons why I contacted you in August to do the show was that you had an episode about new words. And one of those new words that you that some caller suggested was automagical.
Oh, right. I love that.
Do you like that word?
I love that word, automagical. It describes how things that you don't understand happen on your computer. It automagically happens.
Okay.
That my email program checks my email automagically.
Yeah, it was the first time I'd heard a real positive expression of that. Miles and I have a gripe about automagical. Miles, can you explain our gripe?
Yeah, I personally loathe this new word. And I come from a programming background, and I hate this word because it has a bit of elitism associated with it. This is too complicated, and I do this really amazing thing, and you just put this input and it gives out this output. That by itself, I guess I wouldn't have a problem with, were it not for things like automatic cars. I know relatively little about cars. I know even less about automatic transmissions.
Mm-hmm.
And what I know is I press the pedal, and it may be a 4-gear automatic transition, a 5-gear automatic transition. It may be like my Prius, which is a continuously variable transmission. I have no idea what happens from the time that I press the pedal to me going from 0 to 60.
Yeah.
And yet I wouldn't think to rename those cars an automagic transmission versus a manual transmission.
The reason I dislike it so much is if you went and talked to a mechanic and said, hey, I don't understand how the transmission works, and the mechanic said to you, it's automagical. It's almost like you're too stupid to understand this, and therefore I'm not going to go into it. That's the reason I dislike the word. It
right,
feels
the,
like a
the
dismissal.
Elitism. Yeah, yeah,
it's not even just the elitism, but yeah, it's treating. Yeah, I guess that's a good.
Oh my gosh, you just completely convinced me. It's condescending, isn't it?
It is condescending. Now the other thing is though, it can be friendly. I mean, Miles and I can use this together as a joking word. But that's just like we can use foul language as a joking word.
Yeah.
When it comes down to it, it's kind of offensive. Now, I don't know. Maybe other people have a different get on.
I know so many people who love that word, who like using that word. And for me, automatic is a word.
It's the same word.
Yeah, it's the exact same word. And so it's the redundancy aspect of it that bothers me the most.
But the truth is, it is a very different meaning of a word. If I say something is automatic versus automagical, one is saying it's automatic and I understand how it works, and one is saying I have no idea how it works and it's automatic. So it's a valid word in that sense. It's just that when you use it, it's very easy to sound snobbish and be insulted.
Well, in terms of validity is just, do a large number of people use that to convey a term? That's really what it comes down to in terms of rules.
I don't think it's widespread anymore. But ever since that listener from my show wrote in with it, I can't look at the word automatic without saying automagical anymore. It's a...
Okay, so we got an email about hyphens and m-dashes, and of course, this is something that happens all the time when you're talking about grammar. You get really intense emotional output from people.
Right.
how do you cope with that?
Well, how do I cope with it? I mean, for the most part, it's not directed at me, so it's fine. you know, I think it's wonderful that people are passionate about language. About half of the emails I get from people are asking for help, and the other half are asking me to please set the world straight on some pet peeve that someone has. And what's interesting about the pet peeves is that often they are about things that aren't hard and fast rules. There are so many things in language that are style issues instead of real rules. A good example is the serial comma. If you have a list of items like red, white, and blue, some people will put a comma before the final and others won't. And some people, for them, that will be a pet peeve. Why do people always leave out that comma? Why do they put it in? But it can be done either way. It's a different publication.
It's a style.
It's a style.
What do you prefer?
I prefer the serial comma because I think it adds clarity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too.
Well, according to the Chicago Manual of Style, and according to Shrunk and White, you have to have the serial comma.
Right.
Right. But newspapers, they constantly leave it out. But then again, newspaper and print
to
publications.
To me, I see red, white, and blue. Uh-huh. Like white and blue are together.
Right.
But red's
right.
Not part of it.
We are spiraling
you
down.
You can go on. And on. You know what drives me crazy? It's basically.
Yeah.
Everybody uses basically.
It's unnecessary.
Why do you basically dislike it?
It's just this, so when somebody uses it, it just stands out to me and I miss part of the sentence because I think, oh, I hate that. Oh, what did they say?
Can people speak in such a way that's so incorrect that you just get frustrated and just have to walk away from them?
I haven't gotten to that point yet.
Well, there's you bring up an interesting point, the what is correct. And that's something, it's another reason why I haven't corrected you as often in the last few years, is that I've, in reading from many different linguists, from seeing a lot of conversations, the idea of this is the correct grammar
is almost always wrong.
Yeah.
It's this pedantic.
Yeah. What's interesting
nonsense.
Is people will get you for using a word that's not a word, and then it gets added to the dictionary. So
right.
So this is popular culture we're talking about, and anything that's used in popular culture gets added to the dictionary.
Right. There are two different kinds of grammarians. There are prescriptivists and descriptivists. And so a descriptivist will say, well, people say it that way, so it's a word.
Right.
And the prescriptivist will say, that's not the rule. It's not a word. It didn't exist before today. It can't exist now. And dictionaries tend to be on the descriptivist side.
Right.
So if it's, you know, used a lot, they'll put it in the dictionary.
Sure, sure.
And it makes life more interesting.
Let's get back to podcasts a little bit and starting a company. Is this a solely owned company, a business? Are you, how's the structure legally?
I'm incorporated.
You're
so
incorporated.
I had been incorporated before as a technical writer. So mm-hmm. I had a little firm that did technical writing. So it was very easy for me to switch it over to being incorporated.
And is Legal Lad your lawyer?
No, but I have asked him for advice on occasion.
Yeah, he's got some great input on legal matters. If you haven't experienced the shows that quickanddirtytips.com has, I highly recommend taking a look at it. If you're not familiar with podcasting, it is an amazing new way of getting content. I listen to almost all NPR shows through it. I listen to Dr. Don through it because, of course, prior to Geek Speak, the show that's on live is Dr. Don, so I don't have time to listen live, so I listen via podcasting. It's a great way of experiencing. One of the things I noticed is that, of course, it's become very popular. The expo that's happening next month, Portable Media Expo.
Right.
It's not called podcasting. Can you talk a little bit about what Portable Media is?
You know, I'm not sure why. I think the name used to be the Podcasting Media Expo, and they changed it. I'm not really sure why, but Portable Media, I think of, well, there's this debate about what is a podcast,
right.
Because there are so many different ways to get recorded, time-shifted media now. You could download the MP3, you could subscribe, you could listen mm-hmm. online streaming, you could listen online not streaming. You know, and there's a question about whether or not it has to be associated with an XML feed to be considered a podcast. And now video podcasting is exploding, and there's a big debate about what to call that. Do we call it vidcasting, video podcasting? You know, what do you call it? So the language around podcasting is really evolving too, yeah. Very quickly.
Well, when it began, it was having to do with the iPod, the Apple iPod, and that's where podcasting came from. So I think it might have also been a trademark issue. I seem to recall Apple making kind of a stink about it.
Yeah, but then there are people who deny that, and they say that pod stands for portable on-demand media. So I don't know what the truth is.
Yeah. You can turn any word into an acronym.
Yeah, I wasn't around then.
So the network that you created and the business you created is sustaining you. Are you planning on, is it still growing?
Oh, yes, it is still growing. I mean, you think Apple is, you know, what are they selling? Something like 100,000 iPods a day. I mean, I think I think only about 12% of people in the U.S. listen to podcasts right now. So there's just huge room for growth as people discover the medium. They discover that, wow, I can get all this great stuff free and listen to it while I'm driving or walking or jogging or whatever. So I think the market is going to continue to grow a lot. And I'm excited about that.
Mignon Fogarty is Grammar Girl. She's the owner and operator of quickanddirtytips.com. She's got a book out, Grammar Girl's Quick and Dirty Tips to Clean Up Your Writing. Audiobook only, hour-long format, 25 tips useful. A lot of these are available on her podcast, which is free, with a little bit of commercial support to help subsidize your lifestyle and everything. And you have a whole bunch of other, five other shows, which have that same five-minute quick tip format. Really appreciate your content and the creation of your network, and love the shows. And thank you so much for being with us today.
You bet. Thank you.
This is Geek Speak. You're listening to. I'm Lyle Troxell. The Geeks This Morning, Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland. And answering the phones is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you so much.
This week on This American Life, Keith grew up in the Depression in Oklahoma.
He was going to be a preacher.
Then he was a Hollywood actor, then a beat writer, then a salaryman, then a suburbanite swinger, then a hippie.
He was smoking marijuana, taking LSD, and also...
then a member of the Moral Majority.
We're just a regular Christian-raised family.
The cultural shifts of the 20th century all told through one man's life, this week on This American Life.
Sunday morning at 10 on KUSP.
Mignon, we have time for one more question, so Sean, would you?
Oh, great.
Yeah, we had a caller who also emailed us the same question. Please explain different than versus different from.
Oh, well, the proper way to say that is different from. And the way I remember that, this is one of my quick and dirty tips, is that different has two F's in it. And so I think the next word should start with an F. So different from is the right way to say it.
That's a great way of remembering it. What you did an episode a couple weeks ago, the.
Right.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because it was a funny episode to listen to because it was so hard to say.
It was so hard to say. What do you do when you have a sentence you're talking about the, you want to say the New York Times, for example, if the is a formal part of their name. And it looks so awkward. So really, it's not grammatically incorrect, but you should just rewrite the sentence to avoid that whole issue because it just looks so bad. And if you're trying to read it, it's even worse.
It's always a great suggestion.
Just rewrite it.
Thank you so much for being on GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. The Geeks This Morning, Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland answering the phone was Maggie Cleveland. Our guest today was Mignon Fogarty, owner and operator of quickanddirtytips.com. Thank you all for listening to Geek Speak. To those that called in, thanks for making Geek Speak what it is. Without you, it would just be us geeking out about grammar and podcasting. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, who's used by permission. Geek Speak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.